Start this morning in 1 Kings chapter 11. 1 Kings 11, if you want to get your Bible there. A friend of mine who was familiar with another man's situation. This man was in his upper 50s, if I remember the ages right. Fixing to have what would be called a serious surgery. Weren't really sure if it would be a benefit and if that he would even make it through it. And he told my friend, he said, you know, if this doesn't work out and I don't make it through this, that'll be okay. Because I have seen a lot of people, as they get older, lose their conviction. Think about that a second. Here's this man who's recognizing, and maybe from his own experience and others that he had saw, people that were so strong. So, can me and you apply this to our own life? Can we think back to people we saw that was an example to us? Someone we maybe even wanted to imitate. And then as they got older, maybe a spouse died, maybe a child died, maybe something happened, and they were just a shell of themselves. I'm not talking about physically. All of us are gonna deteriorate physically. This man says, I'm okay if I die in this thing. I'm okay if I don't make it to be old. Because I've seen a lot of people, as they get older, lose their conviction. What we're going to talk about today is finishing strong. Making sure this does not happen to us. Does it worry us that maybe we could lose our conviction a little bit later on? Are we so bold to think that it couldn't happen to us? We've seen it happen here. We're going to look at real quickly at a bunch of examples of people that it happened to. Good people that as they got older kind of drifted a little bit. Are we so bold to think it can't happen to us? Now, it doesn't have to happen to us. And we have examples in our life of those who finished strong, but we have also seen people fade a little bit short. So let's look at that today, and let's kind of remind ourselves about this danger. And we're going to do it by starting out in the period of the kings. Specifically the divided period. You had Israel to the north, and from Jeroboam on, 20-something kings. There wasn't a faithful one of them to be found. No king in Israel was faithful. Well, Judah wasn't a whole lot better. But in Judah, there were, every now and then, they were the minority. But in Judah, you had some really good men that showed up along the scene. And they kind of got things back to where the law became a focus. Now, here's the thing. We're not going to look at them all today. We're going to just kind of touch the surface. But it's interesting, and interesting might not be the right word. Sad would be a better word to put in. I know you'll be studying, you're studying the United Kingdom now. The adults you'll be in the divided kingdom not very long from now. Pay attention when you get there. Remember this, 3 or 4 months or however long it takes to get to that point. Pay attention to the kings of Judah. And when those good kings roll around, look how many of them in their older years didn't stand like they did when they were younger. We're going to start with Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 11. This is not the divided period, obviously. But Solomon had a good start. Solomon, I'm going to give you what you want. Tell me what you want. I want to rule these people well. This is an incredible responsibility I've been given. I want to be wise. I want to make good decisions for them, for their benefit. And so we see his beginning. We see early on in his reign when the temple was built and how things were such in order. The smoke of God's presence blinded the priests. They had to leave. They couldn't do the work. It was so thick. There was a good beginning to Solomon's reign. And then you look in chapter 11, verse 1, but King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the Zidonians, the Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord said to the children of Israel, you shall not go into them, they shall not come into you, for they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave to them in love. Solomon had a good start, but he didn't end well. And now we have to apply this however we need to apply it. But the point that we see here is he had bad influences around him. Now specifically, the mention there is of the wives that he brought in. From all these places, every one of those wives from foreign nations, you know what they brought with them? They brought idols with them. You know what they brought with them? They brought a system of worship that they grew up with, and they just all brought it in. And it all in time, you've got this mortgage board of stuff. And Solomon is not the same guy that was asking for wisdom. He's got wisdom and he's not using it. And me and you need to be careful. Not doing what Solomon is doing here. About 700 wives and 300. But me and you can fill our lives with people that are not godly influences. We can give our heart away in a lot of various realms. And we surround ourselves around slowly but consistently eating away at our conviction, eating away at our strength, eating away at our very faith. We've seen it happen. Let's not be so arrogant to think that it can't happen to us. Be careful about our influences. Look in 2 Chronicles 16. Let's talk about Asa. Asa was an incredible king. 50-something years. Incredible how faithful Asa was. And in his older age, a couple of things happened. In 2 Chronicles 16, start with me verse 7. And you remember that during the divided period, there was a lot of battles going on. There was a lot of attacks. And well, here's one of those times where Asa and Judah as a whole, Asa specifically as the king, they go out and they get some help. Hey, this nation is threatening us. Will you come and protect? Will you come and help us? We want your soldiers. We want your chariots. We want your swordsmen. And in verse 7, Asa gets rebuked for that. God sends a prophet to him. In verse 7 of 2 Chronicles 16, at that time, Hanani the seer came to Asa, king of Judah, and he said unto him, because you relied on the king of Syria, and you did not rely on the Lord your God, therefore is the host of the king of Syria escaped out of your hand. You want to know why you lost? You want to know why you didn't win? Verse 8. Were not the Ethiopians and the Lubans a huge host? Very many chariots and horsemen. And yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. He's just reminded him, do you not remember these other battles the Lord fought for you? And you smashed them. What made you think this would be different? Why do you go somewhere else for your help? Who helped you then? Verse 9. Might want to underline it in our mind. The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in behalf of them whose heart is perfect, devoted toward him. What he's telling Asa is, God is scanning. He knows who faithful people are. He knows who they are, and he can help. Here and now I've done foolishly. From henceforth, you will have wars. Here's the problem, Asa. You didn't trust God. You trusted in these foreign nations. You know God has helped you before, and this time you go somewhere else for your aid. You know what you've done? You've signed a lifetime of wars. You're going to fight the rest of your life. The rest of your reign, there's going to be battles and wars and attacks and threats. Get used to it. Verse 10, Asa was angry with the servant, with the seer. He put him in prison. He was in a rage because of this thing. He didn't like what he heard. Here's this man who's been faithful for so long. And now later in life, he's done something silly. He's done something that without a lot of thought, he gets rebuked for it and loses his mind. Reacts out of pure anger. As we say, he didn't like the message. He punishes the messenger. He takes the seer of God. He takes the prophet of God. Sticks him in prison. There's not an indication to be found that he would have done that in the 20th year of his reign. 30th year of his reign. But he's now an older man. And he won't take a rebuke. Are we going to let ourselves, as we get 70, 80, pick our number, whatever, are we going to get to the point where we're not going to listen to anybody anymore? Have we seen that happen? Drop down to verse 21. I'm sorry, verse 12. Asa, in the 39th year of his reign, he's been going a long time. In the 39th year of his reign, was diseased in his feet. His disease was exceedingly painful. And yet in his disease, He did not seek the Lord, but two physicians. As Asa continues to get older and things begin to happen to him health-wise, and there's a bunch of people in this room who could say amen to that. We know what it's like as we get older. Health kind of goes away. It seems to be he kind of holds God accountable for that. He gets, I don't know what the phrase would be. It's almost like we're reading between the lines. It's like he holds a grudge against God. So he doesn't like being rebuked. He doesn't like what's happening to his body, health-wise. And so he won't humble himself and come back to the Lord. Asa was an incredible king for a long, long time. In his later years, loses his conviction, and he's not who he was prior. Turn over a couple pages to chapter 26. Uzziah. Uzziah was a good king. Made a lot of changes. Stood up against family. Uzziah was though it was high water marks during the reign of Uzziah. But by the time we get to chapter 26, he's an older man. Been reigning a long time. And we find out something about him. Look in verse 26. I'm sorry. Chapter 26, verse 16. When he was strong, his heart was lifted up and he acts corruptly. What is that talking about? It means everything's peaceful. They have smashed all the armies that's attacked. They are again high water times. Things are going well in Judah. And it says he was kind of filled in his heart. I'm not a bad king. I'm a pretty good king. Look at all this stuff. When he was strong, his heart lifted up to destruction. He transgressed against the Lord his God, and he went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense. What's the problem with that? Incense has got to be burned, doesn't it? It's a daily thing, morning and evening. What's the problem with that? Well, if Uzziah is the king of Judah, take a real good guess what tribe you think he's from. He's a descendant of David. He's a descendant of Solomon. He is a part of the tribe of Judah. He is king. He is not priest. He's from the tribe of Judah, not the tribe of Levi. And when you put this whole context together, heart lifted up, pride kind of kicks in. I'm a really good king. I've done a lot of good things. Well, you know what I've never done? I've never been through those doors. I've never been past this courtyard here. Never been through past some of these porches around the temple. It's good to be the king. I can do what I want. And off he goes into something he does not have a second's worth of authority to do. But what happens is the priests try to stop him. We can all do some silly things. We can all maybe in the moment lose our concentration. And they try to stop him. Look in verse 17. Azariah the priest. So this is a Levite. This is one who has the authority to go through. Azariah the priest went in after him with 80 priests. 81 men go in after him. What are you doing? Get out of here. You have no right to be in here. And he just pitches a fit. I'm the king. How dare you tell me? Who do you think you are? Drop down. Let's just look at the end of this. Verse 21, Uzziah the king was a leper until the day of his death. He dwelt in a house being a leper, cut off from the house of the Lord. He ends up being in a leper's colony, basically. He's ostracized like lepers were. Everywhere he went, the rest of his life, unclean, unclean. He has to say if he sees anybody walking toward him. Good man. Good king. Pride caused him to lose his conviction. I'll give you one more. Hezekiah, 2 Kings 21. One of the greatest. When it comes to ranking kings of Judah, all along there was these kings that popped up every now and then. We've looked at some of them. But most people, if you're just pressed, who's the greatest king during the divided time? Most are going to say Josiah or Hezekiah. Those are the two, to use a common phrase, kind of the cream rising to the top. Josiah and Hezekiah are the ones we think back so highly of. Hezekiah, as an older man, did something out of character. Again, things are great. Things are good. Word has spread. And people from foreign nations come to check it out. We've heard about your nation here. We've heard about your kingdom here. We want to look at it. And some messengers, some servants, some ambassadors from Babylon get sent to Judah. Pick up with me in verse 13. Chapter 20, verse 13. Now, back in verse 12, if you want to read their names and all the credentials or whatever. But in verse 13, Hezekiah meets them. He hearkened unto them, and he showed them all the house of his precious things. The silver, the gold, the spices, the precious ointments and oils in the house of his armor, and all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in his house nor in his dominion that Hezekiah did not show them. He just opens up the storehouse. Hey, oh, you've heard some good things? Well, let me tell you, what you've heard probably hadn't even touched the top of the barrel. Let me show you what we've got. You see that? We conquered that from them. And you see this big treasure house over here? We got that from so-and-so when we conquered them. And he just opens up the floodgates and shows them everything. And the inference is, this is all about pride. He wanted them to see how powerful they were, how rich they were, how much they had conquered, and how much stuff they had gotten. And God comes to him and says, oh, you. Let me tell you what's going to happen. All that stuff you showed them, they're going to take every bit of it with them. They're going to conquer this nation. And all that stuff you showed them, they're going to take back as just plunder. You got it from people, they're going to get it from you. And you look at this, and this ought to sound familiar to us. Influences in our life that just slowly chip away at our faith and at our convictions. One thing you see in common with these kings that kind of fell a little bit, things were great. Things were really good. They came into Asa and Uzziah. They came into their reign when things were bad. Idolatry. Some of them even came in on the coattails of Baal and false gods that had been brought in through Ahab and Jezebel and their intermarrying. And they came in at bad times. And they had a lot of work to do. And they did that work. And it took strength, and it took conviction, and it took faith, and it took trust. But now they're kind of resting on their work, resting on their laurels. Everything is good. You know, I'm pretty good. I'm really good at this. And before you know it, they're doing things, and they're thinking things, and they're rebelling. And you know, their problems are our problems. At any age, by the way. Now, we're looking at finishing. But at any age of man, these things can be a problem. So how do we start applying this now? We would be very arrogant to think we could never lose our conviction when we get older. Because these men did a lot more for the cause of the law that they lived under than maybe we have done for the law we live under. These men sacrificed for that. And then they had these moments in their older age where they just kind of slipped. What about us? Here's the problem. The problem is we just get tired. Look in 1 Timothy chapter 4. Weariness is a problem. And a lot, that might be the underlying of some of it. We just get tired. There are people in this room who can talk about it very pointedly. I could work all day. I used to could work 12. I'm out in the sun as soon as the sun comes up, and I don't come in until it's dark, and the next day I get up and I'm doing it again, and I did this for... And now we take a lap around the house maybe, just looking at weeds, just looking at the garden, and we make a lap around it. We come in because we need some rest. This room's full of people who can say that. And for those of us that are younger who aren't there yet, we're going to get there. We live long enough. This is going to happen. We're going to die before it happens, or we're going to live long enough that it does happen. Just energy is a problem. And it's interesting how often God used things for us to understand. We can get tired of working. We get tired of laboring. Well, look how he compares the Christian life to that. Look in verse 10. For thereunto, I'm talking about the God's word, message, in a nutshell. Therefore, we labor and we suffer reproach. Paul talking about the Christian life. It's a life of labor. It's not a life of luxury. It's not a life where everything falls into places. I hope there's nobody here who thinks that if I become a Christian, all my problems are going to disappear. No, as a matter of fact, that might bring some additional problems on. It's a life of work. It's a life of labor. And he's comparing it to that. And some of that labor, verse 10, is painful. We labor and we suffer. Now, we understand that in the physical flesh. Sometimes that 8-hour shift, that 10-hour shift, that 12-hour shift, sometimes they are harder than other days. Sometimes it's just, you come in after that long day and you just worn out. We get it physically. Sometimes our labor leads to aches and pains and cramps, and we get it physically. Paul's writing spiritually. Our spiritual labor, we can get tired of. We can get just as tired of that as we can physical labor. The aches and the pains and the suffering and the things we can get tired of it. We get tired in the flesh, and the point is we can get tired in the spirit as well. We've got to fight that. We get tired of labor. We get tired of the fight. Look in 1 Timothy 6, just a page over. 1 Timothy 6, fight the good fight of faith. He's using things we understand. He's given this battle reference. You know how long we've been fighting temptation? Since the day we became a Christian. You know how long we're going to fight it? Till we take that last breath. You know how long we've been fighting worldliness? You know how long we're going to fight it? Do you know how long we've been fighting fleshly desires? You know how long we're going to fight it? And the truth is, sometimes we just don't fight as well. Sometimes we're not as strong as we need to be. We're tired. We're a little worn. And then that's when the temptation comes. And we just don't put up a really good fight. Sometimes we just kind of lay down and surrender. We've got to be aware of this. Look at Hebrews chapter 12. We get tired of running. The Holy Spirit given us examples of things we all understand. 2,000 years ago, they understood these applications. 2,000 years from now, if the world is still standing, people will still understand them. Because laboring is going to get us tired. Fighting is going to get us tired. And running is going to get us tired. You've heard the saying before that the Christian life is like a marathon, not a sprint. And there's a lot of truth to that. We understand the concept behind that. But really, it doesn't raise the bar high enough to call it a marathon. Because here's the truth about a marathon. You know when you take your first step how far you got to go. When the gun sounds and you take that first jog, you take your first move, you know I got 26 to go. 26.2, and I can call it a day. 26.2, and I can hit a cold shower. Some of you have been running a long, long time, and you don't have a clue how much longer you got to go. None of us in this room have any idea how many more steps we've got to take, how many more hills we've got to climb. We get tired of it, but that's exactly what it's being described as. Look in chapter 12, verse 1. Seeing that we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, lay aside every weight and sin that easily besets us, and let us run with endurance the race that sets before us. You know why he's telling us that we've got to endure it? Because he knows we can get tired of it. Endure the labor. Endure the hurts. Endure the fight. Endure the run. Because the reward is great. But we're just trying to figure out some issues that we have. A problem when we get older is we might just be worn out, and yet we still got miles to go. We might be worn out, and we still have fights to go. We still got rounds to go. This is a problem. So let's recognize the problem and not let it become our problem. Fight and run and work, and we'll deal with the rest later. But this might not be our problem. We're trying to apply this. Maybe our problem is we just feel like we've done enough. Look in Luke chapter 12. This is a parable that we're taking out of its immediate context, but the application will fit. But here's the problem. We live in a country that allows retirement
And some at retirement age, as the saying goes, hadn't hit a lick of a snake in 20 years. Still getting money every month from things you did long, long ago. And so we understand the concept of retired in the flesh. There's no such thing in the spirit. You know what we can... And some of you, as you get close to that age, we start to debate, okay, if I go out at 62, what will I get? Now, if I go out at 65, will it be enough? If I hang on till 68, will that be better? And, you know, we can bring that same own concept right on into the worship, right on into our spiritual life. Oh, you know, I did a lot of Bible class teaching when I was in my 30s and 40s. Oh, you know, I did a lot of visiting when I was there. And we're trying to live on past work. Speaking to those that are retired now, by the way. More free time than you've ever had. And I know you're still busy. I've heard people say, I retired, didn't realize how busy I would get. Yeah, but it's things that can be put on hold. You do not have to punch the clock at 8 o'clock tomorrow, and you don't get caught there until 5. Meaning your schedule, for the most part, is kind of on your own. Now, there are things that come up, obviously. But let's not pretend that when we're retired, we still have 40 hours a week that we can't do anything about. We have more free time than we've ever had. And what happens is we just kind of retire from our spiritual work too. All that time when you couldn't visit, now there's time and you don't. All that time when you were so locked at work, you didn't have time for extra study. Now you do, and we still don't do it. And now apply it however we need to apply it. But there is no such thing as retiring in the Lord. No, we die in the Lord. Luke chapter 12 is that very concept in the flesh of the one who, I have worked really hard. Boy, I have saved up a bunch. You know what I need? I need bigger barns. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to build bigger barns, and then I'm going to live off of my past work. Eat, drink, and be merry. I will say to my soul, you have goods laid up for many years. I don't have to work today, but I worked hard back then, and now I'm living off the rewards from that. In the spiritual realm, if there's opportunity to teach, there's opportunity out there, whatever it is. If we're not doing it because of what we did back then, our conviction's not what it ought to be. And the Lord, in verse 20, called this man a fool. Called him a fool. Again, we're taking this and trying to apply it. But it is a foolish thing for me and you to think that our spiritual work from 20 years ago relieves us from anything tomorrow. That is not proper thought. That's a foolish thought. Our works may have changed, but we have things to do. It might be that we just feel ineffective. And here's where it gets, where we have to be sincere with ourselves. We've got to understand our limitations. We have all seen people who tried to teach much too long. When the mind begins to go and it begins to slip and you can't keep a train of thought, that day is real. That day is coming again for all of us. First of all, let's make sure we're right about that. If we're still busy in all these other realms of our life, we're still okay to... Let's be careful that we don't just take a cop-out. But this is real, and this is a possibility. So let's make sure that we recognize that we still have valuable work to do. Don't underestimate your influence. Don't underestimate your example. Don't underestimate your counsel. You've been through wars. You've been through the jog. You've been through the marathons. You've been through the fights. And you have valuable information about that. Don't take a back seat because, well, I'm old. Set an example and use the things that you've gone through to help others who you know is going to go through them too. Don't just store that up. Let others learn from what you've been through and the things that helped you get through it. How did you get through when those tired days come? How did you work through the temptation of just taking a seat and let others take care of this? How did you work through this battle in your mind of, I just don't think I have anything to offer anymore? Help others with those issues because these are real. But let's look at a couple of passages just a little pile on each other. Hebrews chapter 10. We're not going to make application. We're just going to read them. Some passages just kind of teach themselves. We want to finish strong. Like some of those kings we saw, we don't want to lose our conviction, our strength, our faith, our zeal. We don't want to lose that stuff. We don't want to let the good times in our life and the way God's blessed us and the peacefulness, we don't want that to influence into things that would. So how do we do it? Look in verse 36. Hebrews 10, verse 36. You have need of endurance, that after you've done the will of God, you'll receive the promises. We talk about necessary inferences. Why do you think it's necessary? He says, you have need of endurance. Because he knows it's a problem. He knows that it's possible to not endure. He knows it's possible to stop short of the finish line. You have need of endurance. That's when the reward comes. Look in 2 Timothy 4. Remember all those examples that was given of our life in the Spirit? 2 Timothy 4, here's Paul using those very same things, applying them to himself. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7, I have fought a good fight. Do you get tired of fighting? You think Paul ever got tired of fighting? He said, I finished it. Tired or not, I endured that. I have finished my course. Do you think that over the time of his struggles, you think sometimes that some miles are easier to put behind you than others? Sometimes it's easier to take that next step. Of course, he had the same problems we have. Sometimes it's easier to fight. He said, I finished my fight. I fought a good fight. Sometimes the run, a little bit easier than others. I finished my race. I have kept the faith. Sometimes the labor and the pains and the struggles and the hurts. Sometimes our work is harder than others. He says, I finished it. I did it. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness. Turn to Numbers 23. Let me give you one more. We have need of endurance. So let's finish the fight, finish the race, finish the work. Because here's what we want. Kind of interesting statement that's made when you set the context. We're picking up in Numbers 23. This is the first time Balaam and Balak have come together. Hey, I want you to curse these people. And instead he blessed them. Now, it's kind of interesting how me and you know how this ended up. He kept upping the pot. He kept upping the ante. I'll give you this. I'll give you that. And eventually Balaam, he loses his conviction, doesn't he? But when he first showed up, I want you to look at a phrase he says. In verse 10, Numbers 23, verse 10. Who can count the dust of Jacob? Who can count the number of the fourth part of Israel? Who's able to do this except God? He's the one who knows things that none of us know. Let me die the death of the righteous. Let me die the death of the righteous. Now that's kind of strange words because we know how Balaam ends up. But boy, did he ever have it right. We've seen with our own eyes men and women who've lost their conviction as they got older. It doesn't have to be me and you. We have seen men and women who pulled up short of the line, pulled up short of the last round, who pulled up short before the 8-hour clock out, 10-hour clock out, whatever. Make the application. We've seen people pull back. It doesn't have to be me and you. We've seen people who did not endure. But every one of us in this room, if we'll desire it and we'll do what we've been asked to do, we can die the death of the righteous, however long that takes us to get there. Get your songbooks out. To die the death of the righteous, we've got to be righteous. And because we have all sinned and fall short, it's not our good works that make us righteous. No, we have to be cleansed. If you're here and you're not a Christian, you've never been cleansed, you're not righteous. Doesn't mean you're not a good person, but you're not righteous. But you can be. And then you stay faithful the rest of your life and you can die the death of the righteous. For those of us that are Christians, we died to sin. But we hadn't fought very hard. We hadn't run very hard. We hadn't worked very hard. We're not what we ought to be. And our conscience soft enough to acknowledge it. Well, let's deal with it. To die the death of the righteous, we've got to become righteous. And if you are not, take care of that while we stand and sing.